The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 501. It's the 8th of June, 2016. On the podcast today, I have CEO of Horizonte Minerals, that's HZM, and that's Jerry Martin. He talks about today's milestone announcement, which is the preliminary license grant for the Agrigea nickel mine and beneficiation plant. I've got to say, in the interest of transparency and clarity here, I hold stock in Horizonte Minerals. And I tell you why. My strategy is this. When I invest in a small cap, I want to see the potential for that small cap to go on to be a mid-cap, a mid-tier, you know, producer. And I think Horizonte has that potential. They have the asset. They bought an asset off Glencore at a knockdown bargain price. And Glencore spent tens of millions of dollars on it, proving it up. So I think it's a very interesting story. And so listen to the chat with Jeremy. He also gives us three reasons why we should put them on a watch list. And of course, I'm convinced by that. But have a listen, because like I said, this does have the potential to be a mid-tier producer. A very interesting chat I have with Jeremy. Hopefully we'll have more chats in the future as they develop towards becoming a nickel producer. Also on the podcast today, Alan Green, the CEO of Brand Communications. We talk about Brexit, as we always do. And of course, we don't always talk about that. We didn't talk about it before it existed. But the last few weeks we have. And we do discuss, like, it's becoming ever more prevalent in the news. Plus, we also cover Coves, which I hold stock in, and Inoco, two very interesting companies. I think worth putting on your watch list. And in fact, I did have the Inoco shares a while back, but they fell quite a lot. One of these cutting edge tech companies that really rose on hype. But now I think they're forming a technical bottom in their price. So worth checking out. Also, today's penny stock with potential is suggested by the Shadow Trader Guild. And that company is Hurricane Energy, HUR. I'll read out the reasons for this suggestion in a bit.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Horizonte Minerals, that's HZM, Jeremy Martin. Thank you for coming back on, Jeremy.
Yeah, good afternoon. Good to speak to you again.
Now, listen, I know a bit about the company because I hold a bit of stock. I've got to say that for interest of transparency. And I like the forward potential here. But for people who've never heard of Horizonte and for people new to the podcast, Jeremy, give us a roundup as to what you're all about, please.
Yeah, quick overview. We're focused in Brazil. We made a nickel discovery back in 2010. In 2011, we were able to acquire the adjacent discovery from Canada's largest mining company, Teck Resources, an all-share transaction. We consolidated the combined early stage project and we worked it up through a number of studies and then completed full-scale piloting last year. So we produced ferronickel. And then in Q4 last year, the real step change transaction, we were able to acquire the adjacent northern project from Glencore. And the combination of the two projects, now collectively termed Araguaia, creates one of the highest grade undeveloped nickel projects globally out there today. So it's a very exciting time for us.
Yeah, and everyone knows, I mean, most people, you know, in the retail space, investor space, will know and heard of Glencore, and more people sort of well-read will know that they're having issues with their debt, trying to sort that out. And so it's no surprise that they're sort of trying to sort of get some cash on board. And so you got that sort of project, that asset, for quite a bargain bucket price, didn't you?
Yeah, I think obviously Glencore have publicly stated that they're not a developer of intermediate stage projects. This was one of the Falcon Bridge Xstrata discoveries. It sat sort of number two on Xstrata's global project pipeline. The number one project they've actually built and developed as a mine. This asset had around $75 to $80 million spent on it, a scoping study, pre-feasibility completed. And that combined with our project, that the big step change there is it creates a very high grade core to the two projects. It means that we'll have just over 1.9% nickel, the grade for the first 10 years, which means if you look globally, that will be one of the highest grade projects out there today. And it's all about grade with these projects, as well as having a very significant flexible resource base.
Yeah. And so a very exciting bit of news out today. Can you go through the RNS you've released, please, Jeremy?
Yeah, absolutely. I've just come back from Brazil. This is really the culmination of the last 24 months of work. We've just been issued by the Pará state government our preliminary environmental license, the LP. This is a really big milestone for the company. This is basically the permit where the government has reviewed the project. They are comfortable with the mine plan, they're comfortable with the process plant plan, and they're comfortable with the infrastructure around it and all of the environmental work that goes into that. So this basically is the Pará state government stamp of approval. With the award of the LP, we can now go towards the LI, which is the installation license, which allows us to start construction. And then once you're ready to start operating, you then apply for the operational license. And this first step is really the hardest step to get through. So we're extremely pleased that we've been awarded this license. Out of the voting committee, it was unanimously approved. Which I think for a project of this size is extremely positive.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, at the moment you're a market cap of around about 14 million, and you can see the sort of potential here. The size of the asset is phenomenal, and the upside potentially, you know, exciting. So where do you expect to be? Hopefully everything going well. Give us a sort of a timeline, if you can, of the next 2-3 years, Jerry.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously we've got this license step complete, which is a big milestone. We're currently working on a new pre-feasibility study, which integrates the Glencore project with our project. There'll be a new mineral resource estimate. All of the pilot work we completed last year will be integrated into that new capital cost. And the aim of that study, it will show that this project is one of the most cost-effective projects in the market, i.e. it will be low capital intensity. It'll be at the lower end of the cost curve, and it'll be up at the upper end of the grade curve, which is exactly where you want a project of this type to be. So our driver is we will be one of the best nickel projects out in the market. Our next stage is to run into the feasibility, detailed design work, and then into construction. And the aim is that we are ready to start producing in sort of 2018, 2019. Just to give you some idea of sort of value, today, on our global resource, we're trading at around 1 cent a pound of nickel in the ground, which is effectively the lowest point we've been. We're trading at about an 8-year or 7-year low on the share price, which is sort of corresponding with a 12 to 14-year low in nickel prices. However, if you look back at the last 2 or 3 cycles, the premium attached to projects of this quality, we're calling it a tier one asset, i.e. best in class, have been anywhere from 10 to 25 cents per pound of nickel in the ground. And the last major transaction was in Brazil, a Canadian junior called Caneco Resources, developing an identical style of project to what we have. They took it through the feasibility study, where we will be in 12 months' time, and they were acquired for $850 million, which valued those pounds of nickel at 25 cents per pound. So what I would say is obviously we can't guarantee we're going to achieve a similar sort of valuation, but going from 1 cent to 3 to 5 cents per pound over the next 12 to 24 months, I think is very achievable. We are ticking all the boxes. We're delivering our milestones. Brazil is a good place to operate, and I think this is a very interesting story going forwards.
Yeah, definitely. And we had, I see there's a, you know, I'm looking at the chart on a technical level, and it looks quite good. You know, I mean, I bought the stock, I mean, just after you last appeared on the podcast. I just like the sound of it, you know, the fundamentals there, the potential upside. And I think, I hate to say it, but have we seen, and if this may prove out in the chart here, because I timed it quite well. I had a nice bounce in the share price after I bought it. It's come back a bit now, but we're at a higher level than we were. And so it looks like we've seen a bottom. What I'm saying is that, do you think, reflected in commodity price of nickel? Do you think we've seen a bottom in nickel as well?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I believe we are towards the bottom end of the market, and I actually think we perhaps saw the bottom late last year, but obviously there's far more people that can call that position than me. What I would say is if you look at the nickel market at the moment, the statistics out there are around sort of 60% of current operations are cash flow negative at the current price range. So the levels we're seeing at the moment are not sustainable. If we go back 12 months, 18 months, the price was somewhere around sort of $16,000 to $18,000 a ton, up from the $8,500 today. If you look at our share price, we have tracked the nickel price directly down. So you lay the two graphs over the top of each other, and they just track down. So I think this year is going to be probably a sort of a challenging year, but I think next year and going into 2017-18, analyst forecasts are showing a very positive market for nickel, and we will be ideally aligned to basically maximise on that uptake.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And I should get a technical analysis to look at this. I have two technical TAs on twice a week on the podcast, and I think they'll give a nice, you know, bullish uptake or take on this chart. Okay, Jeremy, well, that's brilliant stuff. So, you know, if you need any more reason to convince investors, give us three reasons why someone should put Horizonte Minerals on their Vox Markets watch list.
I think number one, we are creating a tier one nickel asset globally, i.e. best in class. We are de-risking the project, and today's news on the permit is a testament to that. And number three, we've got a very strong shareholder base and support to develop this through to production.
Yeah, and one other thing I quite like, I mean, you're quite you know, modest there. You didn't mention that you've been living with this project for a long time now, haven't you?
I think what I would say is these projects don't happen overnight, and everything we've done to date has been against a downturn in the commodity space. And what I would say today is as a result of that Glencore transaction, the work we've done, the company is actually in the best shape it's ever been in. Obviously, what we now need to do is to work on that market valuation, and I've given you a flavour of where these things to go. So yeah, I think it's very exciting and probably the most exciting part of our journey yet.
Yeah, and you know, forgive me, but you're still a young man. I don't know what age you started off with. I talked to you, you said you got a really, you know, solid, sensible head on your shoulders, and I was surprised to find out how young you were. And how old are you now?
I'm just what am I now? 39. But I think it's a very good exercise developing these things through a downturn in the market, because it just means that you've got to be creative, thinking of lots of different angles to keep moving forwards. And that's one thing I'm very pleased about, is that Horizonte has continually moved forwards and added value and advanced the project during probably one of the most difficult market periods we've seen over the last 12 to 24 months.
Yeah, it has, and hopefully we are seeing a bottom there. And a lot of market experts are saying this is probably the bottom, so hopefully it is. And like you say, if you've continually delivered on these milestones in such a difficult market, then when there is an upturn, then it should seem like a...
Exactly, and I think the downside risk for people entering this stock, you are entering it at a nickel price low, a share price low, with a number of major milestones going forward. So I think it's pretty compelling.
Yeah. It's almost like just, you know, sit there and wait, and everything should take care of itself there. As an investor, I mean, not from your end, of course. You can't just sit and wait there. You have to work hard. But, okay, Jeremy, listen, thank you for coming on, and please come back on and update us when you have some more news out.
Absolutely. Pleasure to talk to you, and look forward to the next update.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You all right, Al?
I'm good, Jess. Yes, enjoying the sunny weather down here.
Yes, and do you know what? It's odd, I think. Well, in fact, I remember back to the Scottish, you know, independence vote, and yeah. I was predicting that the markets would fall there, and it didn't actually fall until after the vote. I think people are expecting the fall before the Brexit, and we may have it, you know, the uncertainty around that. But as yet, the markets are holding up, aren't they? They've had a bit of a rally. They're in between that. The FTSE itself is in between that 6,200 and 6,400 range. It's exactly almost flat as we speak. But I'm almost expecting us to have a couple of sell-offs, you know, in the next week maybe. And I won't be here anyway. I'll be in a different country. So, it'll be interesting to see. Because I do think the markets will wobble, but everyone's expecting them to wobble. And, of course, the markets never do what you expect them to do. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, when and if that happens, you know?
Yeah, you're right. We just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I've said all the way through that I think whether we stay in or whether we stay out, the markets will probably progress higher afterwards. But I think there'll be a degree of volatility too. I think I think in the run-up to the referendum, we're going to remain range-bound. We're going to trade higher. We're going to trade lower. We may see a sell-off, and then we'll see more buying again. You know, we've got a couple of weeks to go, but in the week leading up to it, I believe the markets will just stay very flat, and there'll be very little activity. And then obviously afterwards, I mean, we're seeing even now, you know, with the swings in the polls, we're seeing sterling fall against the euro, and we're seeing. We're seeing the major stocks fluctuate, but it's really there's going to be very little happening until the 23rd, and then you know, I think whatever happens, there'll be some volatility, and then we'll see the market power high later in the year. I mean, let's not forget, you know, here we are at 6.2, 6.3. The markets were at 7,000 last year, so you know, where's all that value gone? I would suggest it's still there.
Yeah. I saw a thing on Sky Business last night. I think it was a capital flight from London. London, obviously the financial capital of the world. You know, people, and in fact, there's I think the first time ever today the Chinese have issued bonds, you know, government bonds, in London. They are in a renminbi. Their currency, but that's the first time ever they've done it. So they recognise London as a financial capital, you know.
Yeah.
But there is at the moment, due to uncertainty, capital flight. And I think the figure was 1.3 million a minute is exiting the UK. So there's that uncertainty. Obviously, people said it'll pull back in after the Brexit, but people don't like uncertainty, so they're just pulling a bit of money out, you know. But,
sure.
The markets, I mean, certainly the FTSE isn't sort of reflecting that at the moment. But we'll see. What's interesting, what I like, though, is that I know the government, the website crashed, didn't it, for people registering online to demand. I like the fact that people are engaging in this, and because it is becoming ever more prevalent. We're turning on TVs now. It's pretty much the top story, like we said weeks back, you know, at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, when we started talking about this, you know, at least a couple of months back, we said, you know, it's not even in the news yet. And then it started becoming sort of third or fourth item on the news. Now it's pretty much the first or second item on the news. So
it's dominating the news every day, isn't it?
Exactly. So it's dominating. You know?
And so it should. Yeah. It's a massive vote, but let's not forget we're still the world's fifth largest economy, and if we keep on growing, we could overtake Germany and Japan. That's quite possible. So I'm not surprised that the Chinese government are buying bonds in London, because there is great value to be had here. And you know, I still believe firmly that we'll have volatility after the event, but we will see some big gains later on this year, and I think there are some real opportunities in the UK if we're in or if we're out. And frankly, even if we leave, it's not going to be a huge amount of difference anyway. We're just going to start taking back some of the money we pay to Europe every month, but we have discussed that before, so I'm not going to go into that today. But you know, we're a powerful economy, let's not forget that, and you know, we're a very attractive financial centre for governments to invest into.
Yeah, well, just to be you know, politically biased here, and obviously I'm going to express my opinion now and again, but in our office, the radio station I work at the morning, someone did ask, said, okay, who's in or out? And they went round, and I was biting my lip, because I thought, if you get me started, I won't stop. And I tried to bite my lip, and a couple of people said in, a couple of people said out, and the people who said in didn't really know, because, and they're fair play, they were honest, I don't really know enough about it, you know, and so I don't want to change the status quo. And that's all they thought. And I thought, people who do more sort of research understand that, you know, there can be a greater benefit to being outside the EU. And I just said, listen, it's just like putting money into a bad business. That's all. At the moment, that's what it's like. Europe,
absolutely,
as an economy, is not doing well, hasn't done well for 10 years, and we keep chucking money at it. And essentially, it's like saying, it's reinvest in our own business or put it in a business not performing. It's up to you. You know, our business is doing quite well, theirs is not.
And look at Switzerland as well. Switzerland is not in the EU, and it's just five times the amount of trade deals that the EU does as an entire entity. So what does that tell you?
Yeah. So there we are. You can both pre-tell. We're both voting in. All right. So what we look at stocks-wise, Al, let's almost talk about something we know a tiny bit about rather than something we know nothing about.
Okay. Well, I was on Tip TV yesterday, actually, talking about this with Doc Holliday and Zach Mayer. This is a company that I've discussed before. It's interesting. Some people may not realize, but ASOS has just celebrated 16 years in business, which is quite something when you think about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's an online fashion center. So today we're talking about Kouv's. The epicode is K-O-O-V. And Kouv's was set up by Lord Waheed Ali, who's the former chairman of ASOS. He's got Robert Breedy, who's a former production director at ASOS, and Mary Turner, who's quite a dynamic CEO. Mary's history, she was a CEO of Tiscali UK, and she was also a director of ASOS between 2009 and 2013. So a lot of ex-ASOS people there. And of course, Couves is selling online fashion in India, but it's tying up with major brands globally to develop marketplace. And you've got this huge burgeoning economy in India, huge emerging class of the new young elite who buy clothing online and are want to be sort of at the forefront of world fashion. So Couves has recently undertaken a capital raise through various tranches of shares. It's raised money at 25p and it's raised 25 million. Now, what's interesting is that I think a lot of people looked at Couves, as did I, when the company first came to market. It floats at £1.50. And of course, there's been dilution, costs of marketing have increased in India, and there have been other issues along the way. But the model has grown and grown. And in its recent results, it announced that it had hit £10 million worth of sales ahead of expectations. Mm-hmm. So the company's starting to perform now. It's starting to meet sales targets and exceed sales targets, or meet sales targets earlier than otherwise, earlier than guidance. And so the money that the company has raised will be used to finance expansion, to finance the marketing program in India. And this is now at a very exciting juncture. And I think what's particularly significant is that they've raised all this money at 25p, and the shares recently hit a year high of 52, 53p, currently trading about 47p, but there's a lot of support around this area. So I will declare now that I had had shares in Couves, and I sold them. Yeah. I sold them at a loss, and I bought back in just under 40p. So I'm now slightly ahead again. So I'm going to stick with this one. I think it's a really, really good play. Obviously, the rise and rise of ASOS is well documented. I had a colleague who bought shares in ASOS at 5p in 2000, and he sold out at 8p because he didn't understand the business model. Yeah. He's now kicking himself because he'd be a multi-millionaire many times over. But you know, such is life, such are the markets.
Do you know what? Oddly, you were talking about Doc there. And there's a couple of things I mentioned, because I remember you coming on originally at St. Couves, and they were a lot higher than they are at the moment, I think. And I put them on watch list and on a price alert thing, and I kept, you know, having to adjust the price alert down because it kept hitting the bottom end, going down, down, down. And then, you know, I didn't really do research. Then Doc came on a while back and mentioned them. Said, "Oh, have you seen the big chunk that Lord Waheed Ali has taken?" And this was at about 15 pence, and he'd taken them at 25 pence, and he put, you know, a couple of million in, and all of the directors had. And I thought, wow. So I did some more research. I liked it, and I bought in about 15 and a half pence, I think. And I bought a couple of tranches on the way up. But I think your friend, old friend Malcolm Stacey, I think he bought ASOS, didn't he, at a very low level, and sold like a ridiculous a high amount as well. One of the best returns ever, I think. And I think Doc mentioned that to me. I mean, I think he bought them at like something like 30 pence and sold them at 50 odd quid or something ridiculous, you know. And I think that's a heck of a return. But no, for all intents and purposes, I mean, like you said, they started off, you know, with this when they started off and launched, everyone said this is the next ASOS, and on that hype they went from 150 up to about 225 or something. But of course, when you have to spend that much money starting in a new market, there's a lot of spend, there's not much revenue. So when the figures come out, and every time you do a financial report, you know, it took a hammering. They probably took a hammering because they weren't delivering on the revenue, and they're spending lots and lots of money, and people thought, oh, this is it. This is a serial disappointer. But all of a sudden now, they are getting traction. That marketing is starting to pay off. They are getting revenues coming through. And you can see at this level, they are, you know, at a compelling story. Because the three people there, top three people, are, for all intents and purposes, were ASOS, you know, or ASOS.
Yeah.
And, so I'm thinking, you know, they obviously want, they're putting their money where their mouth is. They obviously want to replicate this. And I was saying on the weekend podcast, Lord Waheed Ali, he's a guy who's done really well from, you know, just ordinary background. He's become a lord in this country. He's probably, you know, held as something close to a god in India, you know, because he's of Asian descent. He's cracked it in the Western market. He's now gone to India and he's trying to crack it there. And I just think, you know, we've seen he's got support from major media companies out there, just want to invest in 3 million. And so, yeah, I just think it's one of the things to put on your watch list and buy on dips. And maybe it'll come back again, you know, a little bit. But I think for the long term, you know, this is a good play.
I think it is. I think it's a quality play. It ticks all the boxes all the way through. Revenues are being generated. There's real traction now. They're well funded. They've got plenty of cash in place after the recent raise. And the shares are still holding the levels they're holding at after the raise at 25p. And that's highly significant. And then you take into account the board as well and the people that they're bringing in. And also the fashion deals that they're tying up with major fashion names all over the place. It's just the story, the collective story is really, really, really attractive, as I saw at the start. But yeah, as you rightly said, Jus, you know, the startup costs were higher than anticipated. But now I think the company's gaining traction and it's a good time to get in, particularly on the dips. And there may well be a pullback from here, but I may well top up as well. So there we go.
Yeah, I see. I can see it coming back to 40, around about 40 pence. I mean, it seems to be a little bit of a previous resistance there. So hopefully there'll be support there. But, I think take advantage of those dips. That's what I'm going to do. And, everyone listening, do your own research on this company. I've written a blog on it. I'll put the link to the blog, actually, that I've done there. In fact, two blogs on Coup, so I'll put the link to that. So I think it's one to definitely put on your Vox Markets watch list and keep a track of this. And I'll definitely be taking a little bit more in dips, you know. So anyway, that's one stock, Coup. You got another stock, haven't you? Are you looking at?
Again, it's another stock we've discussed before. And again, this is a stock that I bought at a much higher level, and I've held and I've averaged down, and my break even now is at about 55p. This is a company called Nanoco. The epic code is Nano, N-A-N-O.
Yeah.
Now, Heavy Metal Dots. This is a company that manufactures quantum free heavy metal dots, which are used in this is heavy metal free quantum dots. Sorry, I've got that the wrong way around, haven't I?
Yeah.
And they're used in the manufacture of LED televisions, computer screens. They also have an LED lighting branch. They've tied it with Osram, the lighting giant. They have a manufacturing plant in South Korea to supply the major manufacturers in that region. And they also have, which is a non-exclusive agreement, so they can supply through the other channels that they're building up. And this is a company that was always jammed tomorrow for many, many years. And due to delays in the manufacturing coming online, the share price slipped back. They failed to meet targets. But now they're really making progress. The shares have really solidified around the 40-45p mark. And what's interesting, I note that Henderson Investors are a massive
order. Yeah, just looking at that. Yeah.
And if you look at pretty well every RNS that is issued or has been issued recently, is a notification of major shareholders. And it's Henderson topping up all the time. So, you know, Henderson obviously done their homework, see that there's huge potential in Nanoco, huge potential upside for the future. And clearly, once the once this wagon really starts to roll, then the sky's the limit, because we're on a fairly the company was at one stage the most short sold stock in the in AIM, I believe.
I think at the time, yeah, exactly. One of those companies that has that hyper run. I did buy when you first got. I liked the story, but as soon as it dipped below £1, I got out. And because, you know, looking at the market cap, it was highly rated, you know. But Ennis now own over 23% of the stock, you know. So it's a phenomenal amount. And I think we are seeing a base being built there on the chart at around, like I said, 40 odd pence. And so, I've not checked out any of their revenues or anything like that. I don't know what that's like, but I should look into this again, because I've lost track of them a bit.
They're still generating at the interim stage. It was a $5 million loss, which had increased from the previous year, and that's been partly reflected in the slowdown. But they've got a very strong balance sheet. They've got $18 million on the balance sheet this year, as opposed to $9.5 million last year. They've got a $2 million R&D tax credit that's just been received too. And there's substantial progress. They're now manufacturing, distributing, and I firmly believe that the next set of statements we're going to see meaningful revenues generated. And at that point, as that starts to scale up, then I think we'll see a re-rating for Nanoco.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I've just hit follow on my Vox Markets website here for Nano, because I've lost track of them a little, but I should keep a hold on these and look at them. Because I mean, still, you know, they're 100 million market cap, which is you know, that just shows some of the potential. But I know some people. I mean, David Gardner, I think it is, for Motley Fool in America,
yes.
One of the founders there. And he's all about buying highly rated companies because he thinks they can be market breakers, you know, and game changers. And he said, you know, every stock he's bought, like Netflix or Amazon or Apple, they're all at one period, you know, highly rated, overpriced by some media experts have said, but yet they've gone to do, you know, superb things. Yes, I mean, when these companies that are highly rated miss estimates, they do take a tank in on the share price. But if they start getting traction, they start flying, you know, so it's always worth having one of these, you know, always cutting-edge technology companies on your watch list, or a couple of them, because some of them, most of them will make it. But the ones that do, you know, can all you need is one, you know, and it'll transform your portfolio. So,
That sense, Nanoco and Coovs are at a similar juncture. You know, they're starting to gain traction. All of the groundwork and the foundations have been laid, and now they've just got to scale the model up and generate sales. And both are at a point in time where they can do that. You know, the hard yards have been completed, and they can now get out there and actually scale up what they're doing. And I think, both companies are very exciting. Nanoco has always excited me. I just think the technology is great. I should reiterate, actually, it's cadmium-free quantum dots. So it's ecologically friendly quantum dots rather than the ones that are damaging to the environment. So that's what's attractive about Nanoco, and they are the only company in the world manufacturing this sort of quantum dot.
Yeah, marvellous. I'm just scrolling down their RNSs here, and they've won some awards for their innovative technology and stuff like that. So it's worth checking out. Marvellous. In fact, I'm going to invest in, buy some Coove's clothes. I'm going to tell you with Nano's technology in it and just sit there and enjoy my investment. Say, yep, I'm wearing and watching the stuff that these companies produce, and I like it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, cheers, Al. Have a nice holiday on your motorbike.
Thanks, Jess. Have a great time in Dubai.
Okay, today's penny stock with potential is suggested by the Shadow Trader Guild. Sounds deep, dark, and mysterious, doesn't it? Eh? Now, they're suggesting Hurricane Energy. What does this company do? It aims to exploit naturally fractured basement reservoirs and is one of the only companies to do so with high success rate. How many shares does the company have in issue? 981 million. Current price and market cap of the company, it's 18 pence per share, 176 million. Let me just check if that's right. Share price, I'm doing this as live, so it's accurate. So it's 17.5 pence, so a little bit down there. So this is 18 pence, 17.5 pence. What revenue in the company? No revenues yet. How much cash or debt does the company have? Over £50 million in cash, which will be used to drill new wells. There's three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, it's drilling new wells this year, and previously this has had a huge upside effect on the share price for wells drilled in similar geolocations. Number two, it has just released news, that's on the 8th of the 6th, that it's closing farm-out talks until after it's completed this year's drilling. This should provide a nice entry dip for new investors. And reason three, it has a lot of big money back in it. The Shadow Guild will be investing with 50 to 100% upside target, depending on how the new wells are taken by the market in terms of sentiment. So that's Hurricane Energy, suggested by the Shadow Trader Guild. Thanks, guys. By all means, if you want to suggest a stock, click the link here at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click the link there, and I could be reading out in the next few podcasts. By the way, have I mentioned to you that we now have live prices on the Vox Markets website and app? And it costs $9.99 per month. No contract. It's a rolling contract month on month. And of that $9.99, Vox Markets gets no money whatsoever. $5.89 goes to charity, and the £4.10 goes to the London Stock Exchange for the feed. So you will get your information, and charities will get their money. So just go to voxmarkets.co.uk/live-pricing. For more information. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.